This episode is brought to you by charlottesgotalot.com. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread. Plan your trip at charlottesgotalot.com.
Hi, this is Jenny Goodman.
And I'm Alex McCreary.
And we are the hosts of Opening Soon on Heritage Radio Network. We listen to HRN and are actually guests on several shows before bringing our own show to this network. And it's been so amazing to see and hear the unparalleled content that comes from our community, even with limited financial resources. HRN's been making food radio for 10 years. HRN staff and hosts make it look really easy, but making the best food radio out there is actually really hard work.
We're super excited to be a part of Heritage Radio Network, and we invite you to join us in making sure that in our second decade, HRN is stronger than ever. So become a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show your support by selecting Opening Soon in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. Today's guest is Jose Garces, father, farmer, food and drink lover, restaurateur, James Beard Foundation Award winner, author, and Iron Chef. Chef Garces is a second-generation Latin American, born to Ecuadorian parents and raised in Chicago. His culinary passion was cultivated at a young age by his paternal grandmother, who taught him the Latin way of cooking. After graduating from Kendall College's School of Culinary Arts, Garces worked in top-rated professional kitchens from Spain to New York City before moving to Philadelphia in 2001. He opened his first restaurant in 2005 and has since emerged as one of the nation's leading chefs, owning and operating over a dozen restaurants, a thriving event and catering division, and a nonprofit organization, as well as a 40-acre organic farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Chef Garces is also the author of two cookbooks, The Latin Road Home and Latin Evolution. Chef Garces, welcome to A Hungry Society.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on the show. I've admired your work for a long time, and I really wanted to have you on the show at this moment because I think the work that you do with the Garces Foundation is so crucial and important, not just in Philadelphia, but as like a nationwide model. So for listeners who aren't familiar with the Garces Foundation, can you explain a little bit about it?
Sure. Yeah. So the Garces Foundation was started here in Philadelphia. We started really with, you know, looking towards helping the restaurant industry and restaurant workers, and we perform a few key programs. One is a community health care day where we have quarterly health care visits, and we have volunteers, professional doctors, dentists, who do a kind of a comprehensive health care look at folks who are uninsured and, you know, really don't have the right opportunity to get health care. And so anything from diabetes to cholesterol to free dental screenings happen this community health day. And then we also have English for the restaurant workers. So we have classrooms in South Philadelphia. We have about 100 students per semester in which we provide job training and literacy kind of that go hand in hand. So we're training folks for the restaurant industry and then also teaching them English at the same time and giving them an opportunity to assimilate better to the community. But, you know, really we see a lot of benefit from them, job advancement and just overall confidence.
Mm. Yeah.
So those are our key programs that we do.
I think that's so wonderful. You know, when we hear about, you know, these programs, it's so incredible and it's so beautiful, and then it's like, wait, this should be happening like nationwide. Like, you know, this shouldn't be so rare.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, you know, this community of folks that, I mean, they live here, they've been here, I've worked with them for many years, and so you know, we're all, you know, all about it's not as political. They never start out as political statement, more than just helping these people who work so hard and, you know, to be a part of our community.
So the inspiration for starting the foundation actually was a former prep worker, correct?
Yeah, this is Felipe Lopez. He was a butcher and prep person for me at Tinto, which is a Basque-inspired restaurant I have in Philadelphia. We opened in 2006, and Felipe worked for us. He for several years, and one day he didn't show up, and he was kind of out of pocket, which was uncharacteristic for him for a few days. So I reached out to him and said, "Hey, you know, I heard you were sick." He came in and, you know, basically said, you know, he was feeling very bad. He looked to be in very poor health. So we sent him, and, you know, his story was, you know, I didn't want to go to the doctor because I thought I would get deported or I would be reported. And so he, you know, again, just lack of information. We had had a relationship with a doctor from the University of Pennsylvania, Steve Larson, who had a program. He has also a program called Puentes de Salud. So he was able to see Felipe, and, you know, he got diagnosed, and he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And he died shortly afterwards. You know, it was, I would say, probably 3 to 5 months after we had discovered that.
And, wow.
And so Beatriz Garces, who's my ex-wife, but we're very friendly and started the foundation because she's the dental part of this. So we, you know, looked at that situation and said, wow, we really need to find ways in which this community can be just have access to health care and be more aware of their rights and, services that are out there for them.
Yeah, it's that's such a powerful story, and I think it really illustrates the challenges that undocumented restaurant workers face and kind of the fear of, you know, even like seeking medical treatment of, you know, fear of being like deported.
Yeah, and it's, you know, now more than ever, it's obviously the climate out there is even more fearful. So you know, we're there as a guiding light or a resource for this community, at least in Philadelphia. And I do think I've always thought it would be a great national program as well. And we just haven't reached it yet, but, you know, we're striving for that as well.
Absolutely, that would be so useful for so many people. You know, I know a couple of chefs that listen to the program. Like, what can people do, you know, not just chefs, but even diners, like what can people do in their own communities to help undocumented restaurant workers?
I mean, I think there are certainly programs as I've come to find out as, you know, we've gone down this path. So I think just, gosh, as chefs, like maybe, you know, do some research into what other foundations or organizations are out there that do this type of work, and just make your employees aware and give them the, you know, the right tools and information to seek out the help and assistance they need.
Hmm. So as far as the foundation, what other programs are in the works? Like, what does the future of the foundation look like?
Well, we also, I have a farm in Bucks County, and in the past, and we kind of suspended the programs, but I would like to reinvigorate them. We used to do kind of a healthy eating program and more of nutritional based, and we would bring folks out to the farm, and they would learn how to, you know, how food is grown, what is healthy cooking, and kind of more of a health and wellness application. We're also looking to give the folks in our organization some access to maybe immigration law and information on what people's rights are as well. And so those are two programs that we'd like to continue to embolden and, you know, continue our work on.
Hmm. And how can listeners help out with your work with the Garces Foundation?
Well, if you go to the to garcesfoundation.org, there is certainly some information there on how to donate, and you know, we provide quarterly newsletters that lets people know where their dollars are going to. And we also host a great event in the spring where I bring a lot of the collective chef group from Philadelphia come together. We cook for one night and, you know, raise money for the foundation. So it's also it's a fun way to give back, but also, you know, the chef community really is pretty tightly bound here. And, you know, that's one of the things that what we do is we spread the word to the chef community here. So it's not only folks that work in our restaurants, it's really restaurant workers in our community. And, you know, we also, it's not only restaurant work, we extend it to construction workers and folks that are in agriculture as well, because they're in the same boat.
Mm. Oh, that's great. So I have had, you know, the pleasure of eating at Ortsy. I have not been to any of the Philadelphia restaurants, but I'm curious how you describe your food.
Oh, my food is, I would say, so I'm, you know, Ecuadorian American. I grew up in a Latin household, but in Chicago, Illinois, and there was, you know, kind of this, I wouldn't say clash, but assimilation period that I went through for many years. So kind of growing up in a Latin home, but also being exposed to the great melting pot that Chicago is and different ethnic cultures and foods. So I think that experience really guided me into my chef years. And so I think it's Latin influenced, but it also with a lot of like kind of backbone, like, you know, sofrito and like umami-like flavors. Mm-hmm. But I would say it's also pretty bold. You know, I love, like, chilies, herbs, spices. Have been having a lot of fun with textures lately as well. So, my, you know, as a chef, your cooking evolves over time, and I've seen my work continue to evolve, which I'm happy to see that happen. But it's becoming more and more about this like perfect bite or this really you know, creating experiences versus just being in one style of cooking.
Mm. So you mentioned like playing with textures right now. Like, what are you working on that's kind of has your imagination?
I would say, so we've done a lot of crunches. So working with you know, toasting grains or something like we'll do like a quinoa crunch lately that just has a lot of herbs and seeds and spices. So really looking at different textural elements to complement. I think, you know, most food that I enjoy these days really has a textural component. So it could be, you know, using grains, using a dehydrator, and making crumbles out of raw fruits or vegetables. And, yeah, getting creative with it.
So you talked about your own food evolving, but how have you seen Philadelphia's food scene evolve since you've been there?
Oh, well, I've been here a long time.
Right, since 2001, right?
Yeah.
That's a long time.
I've had a wonderful time here in Philly. It's been such a great launch pad for me. I've got a great base of fans and regular customers of restaurants that have lasted over a decade. And, you know, in our business, you know, the years are very similar to dog years. So I'm pretty proud of that. And I'm proud of the contributions I've made to the food scene. But, you know, there's been so much that's happened here. So, you know, I always look at it from, you know, again, we're spanning almost two decades now. So there, when I first got here, there was George Perrier, Susanna Fu, Neil Stein, a little bit of Steven Starr, and there was, you know, these kind of four stalwarts that kind of dominated the restaurant scene. And then when I got here, I'd opened a restaurant for Steve Starr, and he went from 1 to 13 in a short period of time, just in my tenure there, 4 years.
Wow.
So he added a lot of, like, his style and his product to the Philly dining scene. And then I left in 2005, and I started opening, you know, concepts that I had kind of brewing in my mind and wanted to get out in the marketplace. and so did Mark Vetri. So for a while there, it was kind of the three of us, as they would call it, you know, just doing our thing and spreading our food gospels.
Was there any sort of like competitive edge to the three of you?
Maybe, I think behind closed doors, but nothing front facing anyway. And, so that was, it was a neat period of time for sure. And then, I think I would say Mike Solomonoff came on the kind of back end of our time. And what we've seen is, you know, a lot of new young chefs, a lot of new neighborhoods really gentrify here, and they have gentrified through restaurants, through food. And so it's great. Like, you know, in Philly, there's Fishtown, South Passyunk Avenue, certainly Midtown Village, neighborhoods that have really come alive because there's great restaurants there and there's exciting food that's happening in those places. So that's been great to see. And there's just, you know, a number of like young talented chefs that are here now cooking and doing it. So, I would put our city up against any in terms of, you know, quality.
Mm. Which neighborhood has the best food? I'm trying to get you in trouble with everyone in Philadelphia right now.
Oh gosh. Which neighborhood has the best food? Well, you know, because Amada is an old city, I would say that neighborhood has the best food.
Okay.
Amada and the Old Bar are my restaurants in Old City. And, you know, Amada is where it all started for me, my classic Spanish Andalusian tapas bar and restaurant. And then the Old Bar is a take on a oyster and seafood house. And, you know, it was inspired by the old original Bookbinders, which was the oldest restaurant in Philadelphia. It had, decades of legacy. And we took it over and just, you know, wanted to, you know, try to recreate, pay homage to it, pay respect to that legacy that was in place. And so, yeah, we have a nice seafood selection, great oysters, great seafood rolls. But, you know, I think there's great neighbors. I would say I'm hot on Fishtown right now. There's a lot of cool stuff happening over there. You know, the guys from Soraya and Badia Pizzeria and the Chew Noodle guys are in there as well. They have a Japanese concept. So there's a lot happening over there, and it's a good place to just walk around and eat.
Nice. So Old Town and Fishtown are your two.
Old City
and Fishtown.
Yeah. And Fishtown, yeah.
All right. Well, you know, if you're from Philadelphia, send your hate mail to Chef Garces, not me. I'm just kidding.
No, but there are so many great, diverse neighborhoods in Philly, and I think that's what makes it such a great town. And it's, you know, very walkable. You know, the traffic hasn't gotten too crazy here yet, although it's getting, certainly I've seen it evolve over the last 18 years, 19 years, but great food culture, a great chef community, and something I'm proud to have contributed to.
Excellent. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more with Chef Jose Garces.
This episode is brought to you by CharlottesGotALot.com. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts to hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread at Johnson & Wales University. HRN went to this year's symposium to learn about the science, history, and art of bread making. Here's what visitors had to say about the symposium.
I love the geeky science stuff.
Great food. Love the Armenian pizza.
How much I'm eating
and consuming the carbs.
The most interesting thing is just the community.
For me, it's the science of starters.
So much information.
Very inspiring so far because everybody has a different outlook.
I'm not technically a breadhead, but I think I'm going to be one after being here.
So whether you're a breadhead or just a curious mind, check out HRN on Tour for coverage of Charlotte's International Symposium on Bread and an insider's look into Charlotte's food scene, Don't miss our interview with Peter Reinhardt and Kristen Moore to learn more about where to eat on your next trip to Charlotte, a city on the rise. Learn more at charlottesgotalot.com.
All right, so we are back with Chef Jose Garces, James Beard Foundation Award winner, restaurateur, over a dozen restaurants, Iron Chef. And now I want to get a bit more personal. So in the intro, I mentioned your paternal grandmother and her influence on food and cooking for you. Do you have any early memories of dining when you were growing up?
Oh, early memories of dining. So I think, you know, my grandma and mom were both great cooks. My grandma actually taught my mom, and my grandma, Mamita Amada, who I named Amada after the restaurant in Old City here, she taught the family how to cook. So she would spend summers with us in Chicago, and she just cooked every day. And my mom would be by her side, and I was there. So a lot of my dining was at home growing up. And then I think that, you know, growing up in Chicago, it was, you know, Italian beefs, great Chicago-style hot dogs. We had a pizza night from time to time. You know, and we're talking about, you know, two Ecuadorian immigrants. My dad was going to school. He had a young family. He finished college, but, you know, was raising us. And so things were, you know, really about, like, having a hot meal at dinner time. And so, you know, those Ecuadorian empanadas, ceviches, arepas, these are all things that, you know, were like, you know, brought from Ecuador and were experienced in my house on a regular basis. Those were my biggest childhood memories. And then my mom, you know, took her crack at, like, you know, Americanizing some things. So great. She had a great fried chicken, a very nice fried fish as well. Mm. And so, yeah, it was, you know, kind of a melting pot, but those Latin roots were always there.
Mm. So I'm wondering when you started going to restaurants, like when did, you know, the restaurant scene become like a big part of your life?
You know, I had no one in my family was in the restaurant business. Mm. My first experience was actually bussing tables and serving food in an Italian banquet hall, which actually wasn't a restaurant. It was really just an event venue, and they had parties there on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And while I was in high school, I would bus tables there and became a server. And that was my first kind of foray into, professional food service. But it wasn't until I went to culinary school in Evanston, Illinois, and went to Kendall College. And during my time there, I was, you know, living on my own, going to school, paying for college, so I needed to work. And that was my first exposure to the industry in terms of what it was really all about. And so I had a job. My first cooking job was at the Signature Room in the John Hancock building on the 95th floor. And that was a pretty surreal experience. I was thrown into the garmanger kitchen and started by, you know, making salads and other, like, vinaigrettes and, you know, learning the cold food side of things and eventually making my way into the hot side. But all the while cooking in a pretty, like, busy environment and feeling like I was on top of the world. I was on the 95th floor of the John Hancock building with great views outside of Chicago.
What drew you to Philadelphia? What made you leave Chicago?
Well, when I finished culinary school, which was in the early part of 1996, I went and worked in Spain. Worked for a priest who owned three restaurants in Sevilla, Madrid, and Puerto Banús in Marbella. And so I spent some time in Spain, and that was kind of where I really began to understand and appreciate Spanish culture and cuisine. And upon leaving there, I was in New York for some time before coming to Philadelphia, several years. Kind of, I call it like my chef formative years. I worked for, I worked at the Four Seasons Hotel. I worked at the Rainbow Room for Waldy Maloof, and came in contact with Douglas Rodriguez, who's a great Latin chef. He was leaving Patria. He was opening up a restaurant called Chicama and another restaurant called Pipo's, Spanish restaurant. So I went there. I opened Chicama and opened Pipo with him. I was in his stable of chefs. He had a lot of talented guys that worked for him. And he had the opportunity to come open Alma de Cuba in Philadelphia with Steve Starr. So in his stable, there I was, and he's like, I want you to go to Philly and be the executive chef over there. I said, I would gladly do that. I'll have, I was, you know, ready for my next adventure. And, you know, this business is really, it's, you know, the culinary arts and the pursuit of great food and flavors, just it really never quite ends. And that's, I think, what makes it so exciting for me. I've never felt bored or felt like I was working. It was always this culinary adventure to get somewhere spectacular from a food sense.
And from there, you opened up your own restaurant in 2005.
Came to Alma, worked for Steve, and I opened another concept for him called El Vez, which is still open, doing very well, a Mexican concept. So for a little tenure there, I was with Steven, about 4 years, kind of multi-unit, like, and that's, you know, that period of my career is really where I, you know, really got the business sense and started to learn what it was like to be an entrepreneur from Steve Starr's perspective. And then I spent some good time with Douglas and his kind of flavor palette and what he could bring to the table in terms of flavor. So in 05, though, I decided, okay, it was time for me to do this on my own. Mm-hmm. And so I opened Amada in Old City, 217 Chestnut Street. I've had a really, I would say, interesting, fun, exciting, you know, run since then.
I always love to ask chefs this. Do you remember your first night open? How did that night go?
Oh, the first night that I opened, I would say, I don't remember that I remember the, well, I do, I have a good memory of my younger brother who was not in the business. I recruited him because he had just finished college. He was working with my dad, and I kind of swiped him from him and said, hey, come.
Asked to help out, yeah.
Come to Philadelphia. He was living in Chicago, and come to Philadelphia, help me open my first restaurant. I think it will be great. For both of us, we'll have a good go of it, and we were always very close. And so his name is Christian, and I remember the, you know, getting to that opening day. It was such a, the whole process was such a learning experience, and I had such a big, you know, from you know, negotiating the lease to doing the construction to dealing with vendors and setting up accounts and just all of this, like, kind of pre-opening restaurant stuff that, you know, I had done for somebody else, but not when it was
not really when it's your own, yeah,
fully my own. So, and there were times when, you know, contractors wouldn't show up, or there would, you know, we would get wrong sizes of tables. There was just a number of issues that kind of come up. It's like part of it. Part of the journey. And I guess during that time, it was very, I was, you know, everything was very heightened. And I think, you know, I had taken out a pretty big loan against my home. There's a lot kind of at risk and riding on this place. So the day we opened, I remember sharing a glass of cava with my brother in front of the restaurant. And I think we shed a few tears because we both realized how how hard the journey was to get, mm-hmm. to get it open. And so, yeah, it was, I think that was the most memorable part of the night. I think, and then we just got into service, and that's what we know how to do. So. Oh.
And now, 14 years later, there's a lot more, a lot more restaurants.
Yeah.
A lot more cava, I hope, too. I hope you're still celebrating.
Oh, definitely. Plenty of cava, yeah. This is a, you gotta drink cava if you're in a Spanish restaurant, just to feel that moment. And also, you know, there's something so effervescent and light and just works really well with the food. Mm.
So when you're not working, where are you eating? Do you have any favorite restaurants in Philadelphia that aren't your own?
Yeah, I have a few like kind of standout spots that I like. So I really think that, you know, the lost art of, you know, what Philadelphia cuisine is really, you know, Italian kind of red gravy. It's here. It's part of the history. Whenever I think of Philadelphia cuisine, I don't think of the more modern and contemporary place. I think of some places that just have been doing it for a long time and bring that kind of Italian-American heritage to life. So I have a place in South Philly where we celebrate all of our birthdays, holidays, graduations, and that's Dante and Luigi's on 10th
Dante
Street.
And Luigi, wow, that is an Italian-American restaurant name. Wow.
That is. And their vongole is great. It's all, you know, just very, like, soulful cooking. That's a place that I like. And I would say, you know, recently what the guys at Soraya are doing here. It's a Lebanese cuisine cooked over fire. I think they do a great job. There's a lot of flavorful dishes and ingredients that they present on a nightly basis. And I like the pizza at Pizzeria Badia. So that's Joey Badia is famous for his pies, and he comes through in his first full iteration. So really fun. We were there about a month ago with some chef friends. And, yeah, the pizzas are good.
Nice.
So those are a couple spots.
So I have some questions that I ask every guest. Can you talk about one of the worst dining experiences you've ever had? And you can name the restaurant if you want to, but you don't have to.
Worst dining experience. Well,
yes.
You know what? I think, you know, instead of like focusing on a bad dining, I would like to maybe take this opportunity to talk about how clunky our model is. You know, there's in restaurants in general, I feel like there's so many things that you have to get right. So from, you know, the host, the greeting, you know, the delivery of bringing people to tables on a timely basis, the, you know, all of the touch points, the server coming over, the food being dropped, the food being delivered and explained the right way. There's just so much to it. The check being presented, obviously the kitchen executing. And so, it's a really tough model to get consistent. So I've had I've been more like hypersensitive to it as I've dined out and just kind of be like, wow, this something needs to give because it's just too hard.
The restaurant model has to change?
Yeah, I think it has to. I think it has to evolve a little bit. It doesn't have to necessarily change. I mean, the idea of going to a restaurant and having a nice experience and having really good, delicious food and great, you know, beverages, that doesn't change. But I think the model and how we get there, I think, needs to change just as an industry. Because again, I just find that there's a lot of inconsistency, and that model's pretty tough to hit on a regular basis.
Mm. That was a very diplomatic answer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You didn't want to name any restaurants.
You know, I think that, you know, critics, it's easy to criticize, and I just, you know, in our business, I've certainly have had my share of criticism and critics as it relates to our, you know, restaurants and food. So I just, you know, I choose to keep it positive if I can't say anything.
So my last question for you that I ask every guest is, if you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who is invited?
Oh, wow, that's a good one.
And you can invite anyone, living, dead, famous, not famous, anyone ever.
Got it. Okay, cool. I love it. So here's my guest list. Couple good ones. I'm really happy that Quentin Tarantino came out with a new film. I would love to sit across from him and hear his his take on life. So Quentin Tarantino, a few of his cast members, he had Leonardo DiCaprio and Brad Pitt. That would be fun, the three of them talking about their experiences. Muhammad Ali is always up there as someone who I thought was just an amazing person. Michael Jordan, I'm a Chicago guy, sports. I've watched every single play that he that he was there, in his run. That's my guest list, and that's just to name a few. I think for me, I really love Japanese flavors, Japanese cuisine, and I'm still to this day really inspired by the cooking of Chef Nobu. So I've had so many blowout delicious experiences at Nobu that maybe that's a good place to kind of see it all. Okay. See it all off and have some great sashimi and all of his other delicious flavors that he has.
So in addition to the sashimi, what else has to be on the table for your last meal?
Oh, sashimi, maki, lots of caviar, some high grade Miyazaki A5 beef, delicious just seafood preparations, mm-hmm. fresh fish, raw live scallops sliced very thin just with a little lemon. And that's just a few like kind of ones that I just came to top of the mind.
What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? I'm drinking my Casa Azul on the rocks with a little lime and probably maybe to start, and maybe some pre-rot from Spain with my Miyazaki at the end, just to kind of make it all very delicious.
Nice, nice. I feel like your guest list so far, you're going to be mostly like talking and listening to an intense conversation. So this is, I like that you've kept it light with the seafood and sashimi and.
Yeah, keep it light, but very delicious. Also, a little luxurious, but also, save room to hear what everyone has to say.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, Chef Garces, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can listeners find out more about you and your restaurants?
If you go to garcesgroup.com, we will be there. Come see us.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the show.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
And thank you so much for listening to A Hungry Society. We'll catch you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter. Our handle is @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.